The program that who wants to be a millionaire is sometimes the anchor journalist will say, whose head has now become a cabbage? It's after lunch, that's the question that I am asking. Honorable members, we are highly depleted. I would want to get your indulgence as to how do we proceed. Anyway, in the morning we indicated that we will just have discussions and don't take decisions. Whatever we are suggesting will become a decision once we have a full complement of the committee. And I thought that maybe because it's we may want to take our, I don't know, 3 o'clock, will it be fine? I don't know, it's still a long way to go in terms of what we were working on. But I'm very elated and quite excited with the work that has been done to say work done for today, much as we were not a full complement. But at the same time, let me also indicate to yourself, honorable members, that from the public participation to the discussions that we have had, there is massive input that we have made into this bill. So this is food for thought, that in view of the fact that there has been massive inputs which can be able to change this bill to be a new bill altogether, in the eventuality the legal unit and comes back and say these are the issues that have been raised and this is how we believe the changes impact on the bill as has been sent to Parliament. What do we do? What will be our fallback position? I'm not expecting answers to these questions. That's why I'm saying it's food for thought that we should be able to look into that in the eventuality we almost 60 to 70% of the inputs that we have made here drastically changes the bill as is, or actually it overhauls totally the principal act. What do we do? What will be our approach towards this whole situation? Let me give back to yourself. We had just finalized the section which has got was dealing with infringement and driver testing and so on and so on, and we had agreed that it will be looked into if can proceed. Sure. 3:30. Okay, that is appreciated. Yeah. Thank you very much, Honorable Maswangani. 3:30, Siyaivala. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. On the bill that was submitted, we have consequential amendments under Clause 2. Under Clause 2, if you see, it's A, B, C, and D. The one that was submitted to the Personnel Committee. I just want to make a reference that the one that is with the portfolio committee is called A, B, C, D, and the last, and that was two, the last one is the deletion of subsection 3 of paragraph C, which talks about executing warrants in terms of section 31. So we are taking that away. I'm not sure which members are following. I'm not yet on the document this morning. I'm not yet there.
No, the main one is
I'm still on that one to show that this is what it is. Those two, remember we were talking about those two. No, no, no. So, D.
Yes.
That deals with those divisions of issuance of warrants. That's what it deals with the chapter. I'm moving now to the next clause. On the document that was served for Parliament, clause 3, clause 2, section 30. Okay. Clause 2, section 30. Chairperson, what we did engage to the committee, I think Mr. Chue, while he was making his presentation. Yes, I was showing the committee that in the one that was set before Parliament, clause 3 is section 30, right? But yes, but if you look at the document that I submitted, it says clause 3, section 11.
Yes.
And that section 11, the first thing deals with the weight of authority, and was brought down, Chairperson, the issues that were raised that the currently, the RCIA, being is the only one where the minister has no control in terms of determining solely, is no control solely in terms of determining what needs to happen in terms of remuneration and so forth and so forth. It says, with the approval of the minister, acting in consultation with the Minister of Finance. Now there's been a concern that this process is not entirely within the minister's realm. The minister is going to go somewhere else and consult. It doesn't look like it actually works well for the minister. So we need to consider removing that and leaving that to the minister alone, rather than the Minister of Finance. In consultation with the Minister of Finance. The person, the next one, it will be.
Well, what zone is technology? In the first instance, when you said the minister will in consultation, what was your thinking now that we are withdrawing? So that we understand the background. And you are saying in consultation, not after consultation. I'm not saying don't withdraw it, but what was the background before? And you say now the minister will go somewhere. Do you mean cabinet or what? Or treasury?
Yeah, so what I was saying is current minister must go to the Minister of Finance, that someone has to get, what we are saying is, should be within the minister's authority to consider and approve that. Chairperson, I'm not really sure. In 1997, when this act was drafted, what were the issues? But what I was made to understand when I looked at this and asked questions was that at that time there was a lot of horse trading with treasury. It was RCMC Act, and no, it was this Act and RCMC Act where treasury was looking at the Department of Transport heading. I think at the time it was 11 entities that were supposed to be established, and there was an issue of the Minister of Transport having to look at all that, and so he said, once you do that, you can't have the power on your own, you need to come back to us. I'm not sure if the other acts had this, but currently, not all the acts under the Department of Transport have this particular provision. I'm really not sure what went on at the time, but the people who were, they say there was a lot of horse trading, even with the provinces, in terms of what needs to happen with entities within the Department of Transport during Minister Mekba Raj's time. Thank you, Chair.
I just want to check, obviously we will delete this, meaning that the minister will still continue. Where is the board in this whole picture of opportunity?
Chairperson, the intention is that the board should not have the absolute authority. We had some discussions at some point where the board wanted to have the authority to do that. But when you look at what has been happening within the fraternity, I think it would be reckless for the department and other officials to just leave these things to the board without the involvement of the minister. It might happen that people get 75,000 per minute and per hour and so forth. Yeah.
Yeah, in page 5 of the notes that you drafted for us, it provides such pensions and other benefits as the board may determine. Does determine mean taking a decision, or is a recommendation, or what does it mean? But also, I understand why he's withdrawing consultation with the Minister of Finance. But the problem is that the Constitution and the PFMA has given finance or treasury wide powers, and is the only department which is mentioned by name in the Constitution. There's no other department there, except what is at the back, the schedules, and the PFMA also. So it's a state within a state. But it should mean that still the minister will consult the Minister of Finance, as is provided for in the PFMA and the Constitution. So you can't avoid it, because there's got serious financial implications. So we might not put it here, but I don't see any way that the minister can take a decision which has got financial implications, it's not budgeted for, and wants to get money with him. It's not even allowed to him. She still has to. But also when you say the board may determine, is it determine or is it recommend, or can you at least as even the state law advisors here, you have reinforced the lawyers. So,
if we may maybe elaborate what will be the powers of the board, because earlier when we indicated we wanted to take the board off, as the status quo at the present moment, whereby some people decide for themselves the enumerations without consultation with the authorities.
The intention is that the board must make recommendations so that the approval can be with the minister. Honorable Maswanganye indicates that the PFMA, and yes, in terms of the PFMA, the executive authority needs to do certain things, and it's well defined in the PFMA. So I do not think that it would be even wise to even mention here, whereas the PFMA, which is sort of the super law, has already indicated what are the duties and obligations of the executive authority. On the other hand, Chairperson, I think the community needs to understand that the intention of the legislature was that this particular animal called the RTIA should be so-called self-sustainable. And Treasury would not be financing a transport. That was the intention. I think we had to go back and plead that we could be given an extension so that we can fund it. The last one was supposed to be, I think, 2011 or so. We had to go back and say, please don't throw us out. The current financial year, what we call from Treasury, it's 11 million. Those are my amount, and the whole money that we need to work and make sure that this money, if people are not going to pay their penalties after the 2 days, if they pay within 32 days, after you will have everything. So there is no law that if the minister on this one is the last person to sign off, it's okay because we don't have to go to Treasury and request the money. But in essence, the essence of the amendment is to request that the in consultation with Minister of Finance be removed. We will not want to leave it to the board. As I indicated, so many things can go wrong, and we need to learn from the lessons within the industry.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'd like to say something around the issue of the provision in consultation with the Minister of Finance. Correctly so, the Constitution and the PSNA, they are always requiring the Minister of Finance to be involved in anything that the government does that involves finances, Chair. The provision existing now means that the Minister will be acting in consultation with the Minister of Finance, meaning that the Minister will never do anything without the Minister of Finance agreeing to this activity. Therefore, Chair, maybe the committee will consider, after consultation with the Minister of Finance, in the name that the committee would be agreeable, amenable to, rather than in consultation with the Minister of Finance, after consultation with the Minister of Finance. But the long and short of it is that the Minister of Finance is always consulted, even all the decisions in Parliament were dealt with. Finances, the Minister of Finance is always involved, even if, as the honourable member stated, so even if it's not here, but the Minister of Finance is always involved in all the finances of government. Thank you, Chair.
In essence, what you're saying is that this sentence, acting in consultation, should still be retained. But instead of in, you say in acting after consultation with Minister of Finance.
Chair, when the committee could consider that part after consultation with the Minister of Finance, but as I stated, if the provision is removed in its entirety, the Minister of Finance is still have to be involved in the Constitution. The committee would make a decision around that issue. That to have it entirely removed as the department is suggesting, or having it after consultation with the Minister of Finance. Thank you, Chair.
What are we saying?
Yeah, it's not getting into the legal part. If not, there's a difference between in and after. So if the state regards myself, because this is the daily language, I know once you take one, it has got serious implications. So can we be certified advocates on in and after? These are different as far as I know. So that we don't make and insert something that's going to have serious implications and we don't take advice. So that if we don't have to put it here, as you said, it is given that once the minister will take this decision, that minister will have consulted the colleague who's responsible for state finance. So that we don't get into the debate here, as you said, that is provided for in the Constitution and the PFMA. So that there are certain things that we don't have to repeat. So I wanted that clarity, Chair, the in and the after. And of course, we don't have a problem with the part of the clause being removed. Because consequentially, it will mean she will still consult.
Sorry.
Yes, sir. Another follow-up. Maybe the time, the time period is not going to be affected for this long range of consultation.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Let's start with the first question. In consultation and after consultation, there are different phrases with different meanings. If we say in consultation with the Minister of Finance or in consultation with any other entities, it means that you cannot move without involving the other party. You cannot move without agreeing, seeing eye to eye with the other party. What in consultation means? We are still in agreement. Right. Now, after consultation, it means that you have to consult the other party meaningfully. So, what you consult and then do what you want to do. You have a meaningful consultation with the other party and engage the other party. And then afterwards, you remove. Right. But it will not be visible to just engage the Minister of Finance. It will be visible to have a meaningful and agreement on the cause. You would raise his or her own power that I'm not going to allow this particular Francis to be engaged in a particular manner without my authority or so. That would say the Minister of Finance always involved in the finances of government. So, and share the issue of the time frames. Yes, if you are saying in consultation, choose now, this will be a longer process. Even after consultation, it will be a longer process rather than having your own isolated power. But nevertheless, you have to involve the Minister of Finance at the end of the day.
I would propose that we relate this because it's a given. The PFMA always makes sure that we do, in consultation. Let's proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. The next one that was in the submission was section amendment of section 13. And in this section we actually were inserting subsection paragraph DA, which is penalties issued and collected by or on behalf of the issuing authority. Yes. Which one are you looking at?
13.
Yes, 13.
The first question of the principal.
I don't know which page. That is financing of the agency. Yes.
If it was A, B, C, D,
yes.
Where is the donation to the D?
There's a separate paragraph after that one.
It will be D.
If you look at it, there's E there, which is money received from any other source. Now we are saying after D, after G, we are adding G capital A. That will be penalties issued and collected by or on behalf of an issuing authority. And then after that, it will be E, which is money received from any other source. So we'll delete that end, and then the end will come after the paragraph that we are initiating. GA.
Where I said we don't delete ends, when we started, Mr. Sulitano was suggesting where there is an end, we should delete. And there are too many ends here. Yeah. I don't know whether we take the end there, we don't delete this one. We can go back how we started, if you remember. We said where there's end, we delete. I'm not sure whether it was wholesale or it was specific for certain clauses, certain. And I've marked those ends. And. In terms of even when write an essay or whatever, if you say, I mentioned the following, one, or you say first, second, third, and fourth, so there must be end on the second last statement or paragraph. Is that my understanding? So that it should not be that this end will be deleted throughout, otherwise you lose the English meaning. Because there are somewhere where you said end should be removed. I understand you have been here since last week and you don't sleep. So we break late and early in the morning at 8, we want you to come and present. So I wanted that to be very clear. So if they are fine with that, no problem.
Thank you, Chair. Okay. In this particular section, the act was drafted that the Director General of the Department of Transport must approve the opening and maintaining of a bank account by the RCIA. Especially when you look at the fact that the RCIA has got an accounting authority, this falls short of the government's issues. So we looked at this and thought maybe this should be a change to give what the authority to open an account. I must hasten, Chairperson, to add that the board of the RCIA, in terms of the TFMA, it will not open an account without seeking permission from TEDA. Anyway, so when you look at this, I believe the thinking was that because it's a new organization who's going to do XYZ, so DG must take responsibility for doing that. But currently, I think it should rest with the accounting authority, which is the board.
We don't have a problem, but why should they be allowed to open many accounts? Also in the same clause, they say we must delete, in which must be deposited their money received by the agents. They say we must say, in which must be deposited money. Why must we delete their money received? Well, that is the money that is interesting. It's not general. Well, what is the rationale behind that? Isn't it you said whatever is in buckets should be deleted? And here we're deleting the earn from the principal head and leave it general as the full set money.
Chairperson, I think there is the English, whether the says a specific one of money in terms of the monies that will be paid by people, because you've got all sorts of monies that people will pay. That will be monies on fines, that will be fees in terms for courtesy letters and so forth. So there's the issue of English that we looked at and said money means all the monies rather than the money, which may be pointing at a specific lump sum of money. I'm not sure if that argument is sustainable, but that is the thinking. The second issue is that why should we be allowed to open many accounts? Chairperson, in terms of the operational requirements. And here I'll make an example of two organizations that I know. The RCMC, sometime in my other life I was agency of the RCMC, and I opened an account when the organization started. I opened an account with Standard Bank, went on Teller, opened an account, and as you know, we requested that 36 rand, now 36 rand paid as a transaction fee for the RMC to do certain things. And at that point, we found that not all the towns have all the banks. And municipalities were struggling to deposit that money for the RMC. So we went back to Treasury and said, Treasury can open other accounts. And they said, because you got an authority that we said you can open this first account, you can go ahead and open FNB just for operational assistance. So that's why you see the RCMC has got about three accounts. The accounts are not transactional accounts. It's not for the entity to operate from. It's not the one that they pay salaries from, they do pay. No, they are not. They are just meant to for operational reasons. The RCIA is sitting in the same position where we have an account with FNB, we have an account with NetBank, we have an account with Standard Bank, and these accounts, we don't use them for transactions. It's used for people to pay their funds into these accounts. If you have an account with FNB, you log into your account, they say pay your fines, you go there, you pay, it goes into that account, and then at month end, they bring into account. So we have to open those accounts so that money can go into there. But the entity itself, it operates only one bank account that it pays whatever it needs to pay out of. That, those are accounts we call the national ARTO accounts. That is where penalties are paid. You take the money out of there and pay the related issue authorities.
I'm sorry, Chairperson, I wanted to direct that, you see, I was sitting to the main one, which didn't include it, the board. Why then we, why, what, I mean, what are we going to achieve if we on the board in terms of this thing?
Okay, Chairperson, in terms of the PFMA and the governance issues, the board is the accounting authority of the institution. So they are the ones who will be accounting to the shareholders in terms of issues that are run within the organization. Hence, we put in the board rather than the DG who will be sitting somewhere else and not knowing what's going on within the entity.
By the time this act was passed, there was no PFMA. PFMA was passed in 1999. So it didn't provide for accounting authorities, and it was an MEC by then. She didn't have powers. Powers were with the SODs. So PFMA came and changed a whole range of things. This is one of the oldest acts, actually.
Mr. Besani, then it becomes very important that we are able to really deal with the issues, because the principal act doesn't get covered. Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of where we are, we are dealing now with Section 19, Capital B. Chairperson, you see that in that amendment we changed the agency to authority, and then we are actually deleting a sentence from subsection, from paragraph B of subsection 1, which talks about warrant being issued against people. If you look at what has been on page 3 of the one that was submitted to Parliament. We are deleting and the failure to comply with the notice contemplated in paragraph A will lead to a warrant being issued against you or A. Order being issued against which is enforcement order. The rationale, Chairperson, is that because you are taking away warrants, which was the last process of the making a person comply, because you are taking that out, now what will it be that you will do if a person did not comply with anything? The law is very silent on that. Now we are saying, no. That last process must be actually the enforcement order so that you block the license and whatever, and the person must come and deal with the specific aspect. The next one is section 20. It also deals with one is with National Road Traffic Offences Register and as well as the division of warrants. Because according to the current legislation, the principle that if you fail to comply with the enforcement order, then a warrant will follow. So we are just, it's a consequential amendment to deal with that aspect of removing the warrants. Wherever there's warrant, we are trying to clean so that it doesn't refer to the warrant.
Of the enforcement order within the period contemplated paragraph with the large warrant being issued. Is this whole sentence clause?
That's the whole clause that is being deleted.
Oh.
Hold you.
Chairperson, the next one is quite an easy one. The section that deals with warrants, section 20.
Okay, what would be the steps? Because you delete the old concept that the people are failing to comply, what will be required from there? And then what will be the alternative out of that? Which clause does cover that?
Through you, Chairperson, the one that we just dealt with, Honorable Sivande, 19B. Yeah, the previous one. You remember that we said, if you fail, it's no longer for a warrant, it's now enforcement order. So Section 21, the person is the one that deals with execution, of execution. It deals with all those things that you can be listed in the credit bureau, you can, your property can be taken away. It's got, I think, 5 or 6 issues that we believe in the current dispensation there will not be. It talks about the registrar may seize and sell movable property to defray the penalty and fees, seize the driving license and professional driving permits, defray the license disc of the motor vehicle, seize and deface the operator card, immobilize the motor vehicle, and the registrar must update the National Comprehensive Register according. Subsection 2 says upon issuance of a warrant, the register must report the infringer to the credit bureau. Currently, it can't happen that way. Credit bureaus can only be visited once we have gone through a certain process and there's an agreement, a credit agreement that was there under the NCA. So, Chairperson, the whole section 21, we want to delete that because it talks also about subject to the rules of the court, magistrate court, warrants. All it does is elongate this process, get into a tedious process that is very expensive. And if one people want to deal with these issues, they must go through the civil process as well. So we feel it's not feasible that we can do. Section 22, the person this one as well, I think it deals with the execution of the warrant, where it deletes this particular B. You see that one says execution of warrants. Yes, we need to remove that because it is not, once the one is gone, then it cannot be left in there.
So 22 will be if, and it will only be A with Roman figure 1 and 2. So from B, then, but 2 remains, where it says once the summons has been issued, and the principal acts. Is it only B up to at number 51 of 1927, then 2 moving forward,
yes,
remains?
2ABC.
2ABC and 3AB, they remain in there. It will read under section 7, under section 18, subsection 7, paragraph 3, or section 19, subsection 2, and then it removes the agency authority must inform the issuing authority who must cancel the infringement notice, and then it goes and then it says the issuing authority must prepare the summons in terms of criminal procedure. That's how it's going to read now. The whole B on the principal act is being deleted.
That's where the prosecutors come in here. Remember the KwaZulu-Natal NPA say they are not going to do this thing.
actually, you read their submission. They are telling us on our faces that we are not going to do what you are telling us. If you want that, they said you should meet the demander of VGA. What does it stand for? Something like that, whether it's an association or the Islamic. Yeah, Chairperson, I don't know why the prosecutors write that submission. Whether their intention is that they want to challenge the amendment to say we told you. Because that submission is loaded. You have to read it closely. It's a loaded submission. And they say concerns all of us nationally. And I see here now they are closing to them. And they say, no, we don't agree. I don't know whether they will have to be a session with them, because now they come in to enforce and interpret the law. Like we did with ALGA, that we need to meet ALGA to look at the implications. How do you accommodate them? They can say it's KwaZulu-Natal, but lawyers are lawyers. They influence one another nationally. So I wanted to raise that, Chairperson, that we should not disregard what NPA KwaZulu-Natal has admitted. It can catch up with us later.
Chairperson, I wanted to apologize first because I wanted to refer to something that again reminded me of something. Concerning the 1 week we have done away with the Mrs. 21, I don't know. Chairperson, if you recall very well, most of the people who have submitted oral submissions, they were concerned about Section 21. So, I don't know whether have you considered some of these submissions first before we repeat everything from it. Because most of the submissions were concerned about Section 21. I can't remember which clause exactly, but they were making it Section 21. Thank you.
Mr.
From what I can remember, I think Arthur Sonnepool, Dembosi, our Dembosi from GPS, SA, and I think Salga refers to Section 21. And Arthur Sonnepool specifically was saying we should retain immobilizing vehicles. Which we indicated that it is going to be a bit of a challenge for particularly RTIA to exercise mobilizing vehicles. And I think one of the members of the committee indicated that when you mobilize a vehicle, it may mean take out the wheels, it may mean take out the engine, it may mean take out the battery. So that we agree that we don't agree with Altasonable's submission that we should retain it. We said we should remove it in total. JPSA, was it JPSA? I think JPSA as well commented on this issue, and their comments were based on the fact that the RTIA has got too much power. And if this, they had to do warrant of execution with all the powers that are listed in the register, they said that would be unconstitutional, if I remember very well. Okay. So, Chairperson, I might have missed. JPSA submission say welcome the proposed repeal of Section 21. Which, as previously stated, has come about as a direct result of our 2013 submission on the proposed after amendment bill. At the time, repealing this section is the only sensible thing that could have been done. there's a submission on JPSA. So I might have missed other chairpersons that were concerned about Section 21. Yeah, Althaus Wanepoels is also here. He says this is the only sanction that remains in the legislation of blocking documents like licenses. Unfortunately, there are road users who do not even have legal licenses and driving licenses when they are apprehended in the first instance. And the blocking of the document, they do not have even process. Even process will not serve as a deterrent at all. So she was saying we must retain immobilizing vehicles. And as I indicated, Chairperson, it's going to be an admission. Probably we should get claims. In South Africa, we have on the register of vehicles, we have in the region of 13 million. 13 million vehicles. So we must buy nearly 6 million claims in order for us to effect that. So we believe that Section 21 is in its entirety. It's not feasible. We have seen the enforcement order doing some magic in terms of getting the people to respond. For issuing authorities, money, they're happy when they get money. But from our side, Chairperson, you're saying at least people realize that they cannot just run and get scot-free from traffic infringement. Chairperson, in the document submitted to Parliament, we went, after 22, we went directly to Section 80 that deals with registered mail. But from the discussions that we had over the past week and the past days, there's an inclusion there of appeals tribunal on the documents that I've this morning given to members. I understand, Chairperson, when you talk to the learned colleagues, they'll tell you that the act is changing substantially when you do this, and there might be issues. But this is what we thought. If we talk about appeals tribunal, we need to cover the establishments, talk about the administrative justice and internal appeals, composition of the appeal, the chairperson, and then the tribunal itself, the persons who qualify, the conditions of appointment, vacancies, how you deal with vacancies, talk to sittings, talk to decisions of appeal tribunal, and then appeals against decisions of the tribunal itself, administrative work, which is 23K. So up to until 16 of the document, 23K, those are the things that Jefferson just added in order for the committee to see what would they take, the tribunal itself. I will not get into the details of that Chairperson, that was just to show the committee. Then the committee will still apply its mind on the issues that are here and decide what I'm going to do with that. It's not that I want the committee to make a decision or whatever, just to indicate to the committee what was the thinking in terms of the appeals tribunal. So the committee decide if they are going to consider that, they will tell us.
Yeah, I wouldn't have a problem with any platform that will make this process cheaper and affordable for our people, rather than people resorting to courts where in South Africa courts are very expensive. Under appeals tribunal, I'm not sure, 23C, whether they want people to be nominated or they want people to apply to be members of the tribunal.
because there are instances where people apply, but there are other instances where people are nominated. And then under 23D, the chairperson and the deputy, the minister must appoint one of the members of the tribunal as the chairperson, but the tribunal appoint the deputy chairperson. Well, why can't it be a minister who appoint both the chairperson and the deputy? How does the board decide that now let's elect? After all, they can't appoint the FTA. What it is themselves, they can only elect. Isn't it? They don't have appointing powers. So they must constitute an electoral coalition. Won't this thing cause chaos and politics from the word go? Unlike if the minister appoint both the chairperson and the deputy with those powers. And then the other issue that I picked out towards the end, 23J, is that an infringer affected by a decision of the appeals tribunal may appeal to any provincial or local division of the High Court. High Court, again, Mr. Dretan, High Court must be represented by an advocate through our attorneys. So we must go to the attorney, appoint, I will not get back to an extensive system of justice if we specify here. Because as we speak, our people are complaining in the manner all sorts of processes in government are regulated. This and that, you must go to High Court. I know the people who have just gone to High Court now. And in the past, we were supposed to go to Pretoria, except those in the former Grenda would go to Tando. But still, High Courts are not easily accessible by just an infringer. What is it that we wanted to achieve by referring people to High Court and not magistrate or regional courts that are there? Thank you,
Chair.
Follow up, Chairperson. Chairperson, my understanding, as soon as this bill maybe can be approved, that means it will start working. We normally ask where is your team is able to speak to each other. I don't know the readiness of your assistants on the ground, because like you, honorable member, indicated about this thing which is worrying me about to be taken to whatever level, only to find that there are no institutes, such institutions maybe in one certain area. So in this regard, like for example the 2015 that the tribunal in this case, something like that. How do you justify whereby find that the person who committed crime or infringer didn't receive anything now, but it's already time up, the case is gone? And for an example, do you still remember what happened with IEC in terms of the killing one of the arrests, whereby it was very difficult to locate some addresses and it caused a lot of chaos? So in that regard, what is your alternative? What do we do? How do you approach such cases?
Before you even go there, this is our appeal trying to look from the bill that came to Parliament. And this does is not say in this. Does it mean that this is a whole new section altogether? Which actually takes us to a situation that definitely it's a very huge proposal that you're making. There has not been public hearings around this, which actually is going to be a challenge. It also maybe will mean that as we're dealing with this, honorable members, we must be mindful of the fact that the public were given an opportunity. But on this one, there was nothing, and we were able to take a cognizance of the fact that it should be looked into, just including on to what the members have just said.
Thank you, Chairperson. As I said, when I introduced this part, that this is something that we are proposing, and we are cognizant of the fact that it's a whole new big thing that changes the whole landscape of the bill. Even the status, if accepted, changes the status of this bill. It cannot be at this stage be discussed here. It must go back somewhere else. There are processes that are involved. I think the committee is well aware of that. Chairperson, the first question that was asked by Honorable Maswangane regarding High Court. Chairperson, these provisions are trying to make sure that people have got a structure where they can appeal the decisions of the ASTM. By not going to a court. The process currently is that people would be able to go to court, even at the first instance, without going through the administrative processes. So this is to create a conduit for them to challenge the decisions of the FPIA. And this body will make decisions either for or against the FPIA. It's an independent body that reports to the minister. However, we are saying if, because it is administrative, if you do not agree with the decisions of that body, we are not saying you can't do anything. You must, in terms of the law, make, because it's not a court, it's administrative, we must make provisions that people, they can actually go and review their decisions. And those being reduced, Chairperson, I think in terms of how our law works, as far as I know, our law works, these things cannot be done in a magistrate's court. If you challenge a decision, a review, when you do a review application for decisions of an administrative board, you can't do them in a magistrate's court. It must be done in a high court. So that's why it was written in line with the current jurisprudence in this country. The other issue that we need to be aware of, Chairperson, is that we are aware that these processes, they will be open to abuse by people like Dimboski, who wants to challenge anything that the government is doing. So if really, Chairperson, a person feels very strongly about this case and wants to go to the High Court, so be it. However, those chances that know that he's taking a chance will not actually even oppose the High Court to try to do a review on the decision. So we feel it is a balanced approach that for genuine cases he can go there. And by the way, Chairperson, if you are going to review this case and then you have paid money, if it is reviewed, then the state must pay back the money that you paid your lawyer. So we believe it's a balanced approach. The other issue that was raised by Honorable Zlande, I don't know what is Honorable Masonga, the deputy chairperson, the issue of the deputy chairperson. I'm not sure, Chairperson, but we have seen so many acts where deputy chairperson is the status is like of a deputy minister, where internally they would appoint the person that they feel can take their position. It's not normally appointed by the minister, but if the committee feels very strong on this, it can be done. But most they will let the committee do this. I remember even the FCMC Act itself, the chairperson of the Chamber's Committee is the minister, but the committee can elect a deputy chairperson who can chair. So if the committee feels very strong about it, I think we can do that if it's going to be done. 23, Honorable was talking about the 30 days issue, the receipt of residence for the decision, and the postage issues and issues of address. Chairman and Honorable Sibande, in this section we're talking about where a person is challenging a decision based on an infringement that is challenged already. So this person already knows about this thing and then is given his address to say this is my address. So this one, I don't think the issue of addresses and so forth is an issue because that person would already know about the infringement and so forth and fill a form to say this is me, this is where you can find me and so forth and so forth. So this is a different process that is which is administrative and the people who know about the issues.
If you can speak to the mic, Honorable.
Yeah, Chairperson, it's unfortunate that they brought it at the end. And those who made public hearings who said they were not aware at the time you issued the gazette or the amendment, this was not there. So if it is ourselves as the committee who said this, also it might be challenged. But if you have thought about it earlier, Chairperson, this would have been a noble idea. That you see, the prosecutors are also complaining that they have to deal with everything traffic infringement. And they are also complaining that they are not prioritizing infringement of traffic laws. And they say we don't have time for traffic infringement, we have got other things. They have got attitude actually towards anything to do with traffic infringement. When you read even the KwaZulu-Natal prosecutor, they've got an attitude that we are wasting our time, we've got other things to deal with. If the department has thought about this area, this would have been a noble idea. As I mentioned the other day, that when you apply for development, you go through tribunals. And first tribunal, you are not able, you go to the appeals, and it's provided for legal. You can't jump from first tribunal and go to High Court. The judges will say, no, it's legally provided for, go back. And those tribunals are very cheap. You can go there without a lawyer. Yes. But now that it comes at the end, it's very, very unfortunate. Housing, I think, did the same thing. Those who are renting, that I, as a landlord, I cannot just wake up and take out a tenant. They've got a recourse now, I think it's a housing tribunal, something like that. And it has got very strong powers that they can tell the landlord that you can't evict the tenant without giving him or her a notice. And because if somebody has got children, you say, go out tonight, and somebody is in there. So it's unfortunate, Chairperson, they brought something noble at the end, and we are hesitant that it might be difficult to accommodate it at this stage. I don't know, maybe the advocates are here, they can advise so that I don't make a layman's comments. Thank you, Chair.
We stand to be advised, advocates. What do we do? Chair and members, this is indeed a very substantive provision that we add into the bill that because of the recent constitutional judgments that were declaring legislation unconstitutional on failure to Parliament to facilitate public participation. It's rather we do more public participation than not do it. So I would think it's important that this matter goes back to the public, especially the substantive clauses that we're adding, and publish it for comment and request them to make comments. And the committee secretary can advise on the rules of Parliament in terms of the procedure that would need to follow. Because now we're introducing new amendments that were not in the bill as introduced in the House. Thank you, Chair.
How do we go about? So we're going to have a meeting tomorrow with table, just to see the way the table staff, any table staff, see a better way to take this forward. Okay. Mr. Mashangwana, we had a meeting earlier with Chairperson Person based on those new proposed amendments that are quite substantive, and because it's something that the public must have an opportunity to engage with. There's definitely a need for further engagement. So the way forward is there's going to be a meeting with the table staff to see how best to take this matter forward. And I will be reporting back to the chairperson tomorrow. And the chairperson will probably then share information with the rest of the committee.
Okay. I think it's fair. Let's read it at that and get the outcomes of the meeting with the table staff. Then we'll be able to know how we will be going forward. We will also.
Almost there. The next one, Chairperson, is the section amendment of Section 30, which is the key. One of the things that is very key in terms of this legislation. I think we have the committee understands that we are hands tied in terms of having notices because we must have in SAPO. Chairperson, the performance of SAPO in terms of selling infringement notices and cases letters is very, very poor and challenging for us. As a result, we also had to look at municipalities who are complaining about the expenditure in terms of this. So from that, Chairperson, we thought we need to change and say we shall serve notices as prescribed, including by postage or electronic service. I must say, Chairperson, on hindsight, when you look at how this thing is drafted, it's a bit problematic because, as we said earlier on, once you say prescribed, you can leave it there and not say by postage and electronic service. I think the thinking there was just to make it clear that people must understand that we are not killing the traditional method of postage, we are introducing. But if you look at it, it's actually problematic how it's drafted. But the rationale was just to show that all forms of service, the current and that we are envisaging, will be applicable.
So, it will read any document required to be said an infringer in terms of this act must be served on the infringer. Then we take out personally or sent by registered mail to his or her last known address and replace it with as prescribed, including by postage or electronic service. And then the rest of the sentence where it says it is regarded having been served on the date the infringer is signed for receipt is also taken out.
Page
is only one section. In the Principal Act, it says any document required to be served on an infringer in terms of this Act must be served personally or by registered mail, and it is regarded to have been served on the date the infringer has signed for the receipt of the document. Isn't it what is contained in the Act? Which one? Which one? Mm-hmm. This one is the old text. So give us the old text. This one? Communication service.
if you look at the stamp, what does the date stamp on the outside?
1998.
Yeah, this is the first version. In 2002, there was an amendment of the Act, and then it is now in two sections. The latter part that we are reading, it now subsection 2, it says a document which is sent by register mail in terms of subsection 1 is regarded as to have been served on the infringer on the 10th day after the date which is stamped upon the receipt issued by post office which accepted the document for registration. Now,
about changes to the principal act. So for lots of these dogs, members authorized something principal act in the movie that you can do. But bone that came to the table that I referred to this morning was 1238.
So this
one,
there
is
actually, no, you are not given a wrong document. Earlier on in the morning, we wanted the principal act, and we were given the principal act, which is the bill of 1998. And after that, there was an amendment of 2002. We should have said if there are amendments to the principal bill, they should have also been factored into when we're requesting that. I only realized when, because I'm reading my bill online, that's when I only realized that there was an amendment, but the request that we made in the morning was that we need to get the principal act. Did not mention the amendments which were effected in between then until the B38 of 2015. My apology, Honorable Member.
So what we are setting is the electronic version and the process.
It's only one. We give one so that I can't participate.
He
said the blindness.
Now.
I was born before the decision was adopted. So you can say the decision UBT as a movie, but I can't believe it.
So in the mixture of person, they are checking out registered mail and replace it with postage and electronic service. So there's no more signing when the sheriff brings you letters. Okay. So the issue we debated earlier, that don't go into detail about SMS and so it should read electronic service. Okay.
Person, as I indicated earlier to members, we believe that it should read as prescribed. We should remove that including postage or electronic. if you remove that, then there shouldn't be discussed in that. When you mention this one, it looks like you are leaving out this one. So that this, all these things, postage, electronic, email or whatever, can be in the regulations where it is decided to say, this document, you send it by this one. This document, you can send it by this one.
Honourable members, I will have to communicate with all of you once we have tried to reorganize the program for 2 days so that we are able to really finalize the whole matter, because the department was supposed to workshop us on NLTA. I don't know who's coming from the department on NLTA. Then we will have to work it out as to how to deal with the situation of ADO, but also making sure that we accommodate LTA bill workshop for Tuesday, and then we will take it from there. Before midday tomorrow, I would have communicated with all of you as to how we're going to be taking the process forward. It's been a rough ride for today, and I think it's going to be continuing like that. I think we've got very, very important bills in front of us, which actually we can't take chances of just steamrolling them and making sure that we are over and done with them. And let me take this opportunity to thank from the department. I must go and tell the DG that critical people are not here on Tuesday and Tosha. Let us Tosha in a bill, see, and go on holiday, because already people are on holiday for next week. Let me thank the advocates who are here to say it's not an easy one. The ladies were here in the morning, they saw how difficult it was to advocate. At least now, the adrenaline is no longer as pumped as it was in the morning. Or rather, the person who had adrenaline pumped to a disastrous situation has left. And we are here to still make sure that we are able to do it. Comrades, colleagues, honorable members, thank you very much. I hope you will enjoy the weekend, but make a thorough reflection on the NLTA bill as we enter that one. Is going to be very, very rough, because you expect Uber and the Uber drivers, you expect the winter taxi, you expect San Diego, and so maybe we should go and request bulletproof vests from the police, so that we are able to protect ourselves. So it's going to be a very nice one next week. The meeting is adjourned until next week, Tuesday. Thank you very much.